Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Steve Harvey, one of America's favorite TV relationship gurus, had today's guest on his popular television show. And Steve was so impressed with the book that his guest has written that he saw that every member of the audience received a copy of it. Attorney James Sexton is a New York City attorney specializing in marital, relational, and family law who has written the book, If You're in My Office, It's Already Too Late. He knows up close and personal the pain and trauma of divorce and the dissolution of the hopes and dreams we all enter marriage with. His book is an honest and assertive read on how to prevent yourself from winding up in an attorney's office. James has been described by former clients as a courtroom gunslinger and the sociopath you want on your side. He tells the unvarnished truth about relationships and dives deep into the most common marital problems, which he actually credits to poor or non-existent communication. Even when the alleged reason for the separation is infidelity, James says that there was usually a communication problem that predates the infidelity. He also says that symptoms and root causes get confused all the time. James has spent his career working with spouses whose marriages haven't worked. He believes reverse engineering a relationship can help to identify and fix what does not work. If you're holding back criticism of your spouse because you can't have that fight right now, James says, hit the send button now. Although he deals constantly with the heartbreak of others, he still believes in romance and the transformative power of love. His book is his opportunity to use what he has learned to help couples that aren't so far gone get back on track and save their relationship. James Sexton, I have had such a wonderful time in the pre-interview with you. I am so excited to welcome you to Living Above the Drama today.
Well, thank you so much. It's so nice to be here, and that's such a wonderful, wonderful intro, and I really appreciate it. And I'm equally excited, I have to tell you. I think that I always know that you have the best of conversations, but our earlier conversation really got my creative juices flowing. So I'm thankful for you having me. Thank you.
Well, we are excited. I mean, first of all, I do research on my guests. Of course, I think any good interviewer, although media people today really don't spend a lot of time doing this anymore. Why, I don't know. But I'm an old-timer, and so I do my research. And I loved that little clip with you on Steve Harvey's show. And that young man, that was really adorable.
Sure.
And, you know, you were great, and Steve was so enthusiastic. Talk to us. I mean, there's so much to talk about. There was so much we did talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very funny because the Steve Harvey appearance, the first one was a few months ago, and I've actually been back on his show 6 times now. I'm actually going to be back on again twice in April and again in June. So, you know, although it's a little bit of a haul to go out to L.A. to record it, it's always a great conversation because his audience, you know, really, he loves that question and answer format with audience members, and to have these people asking real-time, you know, relationship questions and to get, you know, my take on it, it's a lot of fun, and I'm really glad you enjoyed the clip, and I think it's a great opportunity. I love talking about what I do. I mean, I wrote this book because I really wanted to have a conversation, you know, with the reader and with the sort of public at large about a slightly different topic. You know, not talking about facilitating the demise of marriages, but talking about what can we do, you know, what can we learn from watching how things fall apart about how to keep them together. And that's really, you know, what fascinates me, and that's really what inspired the book.
Well, it's very clear. I mean, Steve Harvey is he's really one of my favorites. And he's got this thing about, I won't get into it, but this, it's a 90-day prescription on how to be sure that you're with the right person and when you start dating. But he must obviously love what you have to say because he's very keen on all of this stuff. And he absolutely supports how to prevent, you know, the demise of a relationship. So if he's calling you back, the audience must love it, and he must love it, and I loved talking to you.
Thank you so much.
You have much to tell us, so let's get right into it.
Sure,
I asked you
sure.
a lot of questions, and of course, the first thing I started off with, being a little pushy, as I said, hey, James Sexton, you know, you're writing this book. Have you been divorced? And you shared that, you know, your own story. So would you start with your story? Because I think it informs all of us who are listening that you really do know the horror of the breakup of the marriage.
Yeah, and you know, I'm very lucky because I say of my ex-wife, you know, that there are a lot of people in the world that I love that I wouldn't want to marry, you know, and she's one of those people, or that I couldn't remain married to. We've managed to have a very close friendship, and it's, we've been divorced for over 10 years, and we've raised, you know, our two children that are now, you know, 19 and 21. But the truth is that, you know, we had a very traditional kind of a love story. We met in college at a fire drill, actually, in the dorm that we both lived in. And
oh, that's great.
We followed a very traditional path, you know, a path that our parents had followed. You know, we met when we were young, you know, 17, 18, and we dated for a number of years. And then we said, okay, now it's time to get married. And we got married. And, you know, within a year or two, you know, had our first child. And, you know, we're doing all the things that you're supposed to do, you know, from a cultural standpoint. But, you know, we were not, one of the things we weren't doing was being honest with each other about what we were really feeling and what was really happening inside of us and what our level of satisfaction was, you know. And ultimately, you know, after, you know, 12 years or so of marriage, our marriage ended. And even in that permutation where it ends with a mutuality and it ends with a respect and it ends with a still a shared affection for each other and a shared dedication to our children, it's still incredibly painful. You know, divorce is a loss of a giant magnitude. You know, to lose the way you, you know, I had been a divorce lawyer for over 10 years when I got divorced, and I remember viscerally the first Thanksgiving I didn't have my children. And I remember sitting in the kitchen of my, you know, solo apartment and just sitting at the kitchen table just crying, you know, alone. I didn't want to go anywhere else for Thanksgiving because I didn't want to do it without my kids, but I couldn't have the kids because, I'd had them the prior year, and it was really her turn to have them. And I remember just the feeling of if it's this hard when you have a friendly divorce and a divorce where, you know, I still had the ability with my ex-wife to call her after I'd had a rough day and say, hey, can I just swing by and grab the kids and take them out for ice cream? I just need, like, to see them and feel connected to them. And she, of course, yeah, come by, no problem, come get them. And so I had the best case scenario, and it still was so brutal. So that really transformed how I looked at what I did. I always took what I did very seriously, and I was always very humbled by the trust that people placed in me to protect these things that they value so much, their children, their finances, their future. But it really brought home to me emotionally, viscerally, how even a friendly divorce is just such a punctuation mark in your life. You know, just like when you have children, or there's this thing that happens, and then it just becomes a punctuation mark that there's everything in life before it and then everything in life after it. You know?
Boy, is that well said. Wow, James. Yeah. yes, absolutely.
But I think divorce is, you know, one of the things I realized from my own divorce that ultimately, you know, sometime later led to this book, is that divorce really is an invitation. You know, it's an invitation to, you know, the barn's burned down and now I can see the moon, you know, like everything is kind of fallen apart and you can't pretend you meant to be there. You know, no one, when they get married, means to get divorced. It's in a culture that's as curated as our culture is now with social media and people only showing the highlight reel of their life and or of their day. You know, it's very hard for us to so publicly acknowledge when we've failed at something, and divorce is a failure. You know, it feels like a failure and it looks like a failure. You know, no one sets their heart's GPS to divorce. You know, you set it to living happily ever after. And so
absolutely,
it's wonderful please go ahead.
We had talked about some of the implications of it. We talked about the human aspect of it. Like, you know, we are herd animals. We want to belong. We want to love. We want to be safe. We want to have safe harbor. We want to be in community. We want to be in relationship. This is our nature. It's who we are. It's what we are. And to belong and to be heard and seen and valued and cherished and to be a beloved, these are profoundly kind of primitive and important urges that we all have. And even though people are not getting married as much today as they were, being in relationship, being a couple, cohabiting, or just forming that bond is so critical. And you see the fallout of the loss of that. Do you want to talk about, like, the emotional devastation. You told me such a touching thing that you've had clients who, you know, are going through the hell of divorce, and you actually connect them, you network them with other people. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the first divorce lawyer to do that. We don't compare notes very often as a profession, but partly because we use all of our techniques to beat each other up. But you know, something that I've been doing for the last a decade or so, the second decade really of my practice is, you know, I've have clients all the time because I represent all kinds of people. I represent people who their spouse is cheating on them, and I represent people who've cheated on their spouse. I represent people who their spouse, you know, has a drug or alcohol problem, and I represent people who have a drug or alcohol problem. You know, I represent people who have engaged in all kinds of financial improprieties that have been caught by their spouse, and I represent people who caught their spouse engaging in that stuff. So, you know, I wear the white hat, I wear the black hat, you know, I don't necessarily just see one side. I see the human emotional complexity. And what often happens is I have people who come in, and this happened really just recently, even another example of it, where I had a woman in my office, and it happened to be a woman. This happens with men all the time, too. And she was just devastated. She had discovered her husband's infidelity. It was a long-time infidelity. She confronted him with the irrefutable proof of it in the form of, you know, intercepted text messages and emails. And he basically said, and I talk about in my book, you know, the different types of affairs that I see in my practice, but this was the kind that I think is probably the most painful, which is, you know, when a person says, yeah, you know, I had an affair and I'm leaving you for them. I'm in love with this other person. I want this other person. I don't want you. And it feels like a rejection of such a tremendous magnitude. And this was a woman who was fairly, you know, content in the life that she had, you know, at least by her accounting of it. And, you know, her identity as a mother, you know, and as a spouse of this very successful, you know, financial professional was really who she was. You know, she'd been, there's the you and the me and the we in a marriage, and she had been in the we for so long that she kind of didn't even know who the me was anymore. And she's just sitting in my office just devastated because she feels so exposed and she feels so frightened and she doesn't know, you know, financially, personally, how is this going to get done? And she's in the storm, you know, she's in really the hour of lead, you know, that hardest time.
Oh, yes. The hour and of lead. Oh, God, yeah.
And as she's talking to me about this, I know that she doesn't have what I have, which is the benefit of having seen thousands now of people go through this process from beginning to end. So one of the things that I tried to do in that case, and I do it fairly often these days, is I had another client who, you know, probably about 8 or 9 years ago was in exactly the same position that this woman is in. She was sitting in the same chair in the same office telling me roughly the same story. And her husband was a dentist, not a financial professional, but otherwise the facts were the same. And so after I kind of, you know, gave this woman the sort of discussion and confidence and legal advice that she needed, I actually stepped out and I went to the other room and I called, because I do stay in touch with a lot of my former clients. You know, you go a lot of miles together when you're someone's divorce lawyer, and very often you keep a connection to the person. And I called this woman and I said to her, look, I have essentially you 7 or 8 years ago sitting in my office right now. And like you were when you sat in that chair, she just can't, she's at the bottom of the mountain. She cannot see the sky. She is so destroyed. Can I put you in touch with her? And she said, well, of course, you know, of course you can, definitely. And then I went in and I said to this woman, look, I don't want to put you on the spot, and you don't have to do this, but I want you to talk to a former client of mine. You know, she can tell you about her own experiences, and she's been through some of the same things you're describing. And, you know, if nothing else, it'll give you confidence in my abilities, because this other person is now remarried, is very happy, you know, is really living a life that's very different and very satisfying to them in different ways than the way it would have been if they'd stayed in the marriage they were in. And really what ended up happening is what always ends up happening when I make those kinds of connections with clients and former clients, and that is that I get a call from both of those people saying that that was a really healing and really gratifying experience too, from both the person who is down in that hole right now and going through it to see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and also for that person who's now come so far to sort of have a glimpse of the memory of that person they once were in that same chair and how far they've come from that. You know, it's, you know, we don't know who discovered water, but it wasn't a fish. You know, like when you're in something, you just, you don't see it clearly. And so for someone who's come so far to talk to a person like that, it's really like seeing a photo of yourself at a different time in your life. So, you know, for me, those are the kinds of inspirational opportunities you get doing what it is that I do for a living that really drew a straight line to the book, because it really, the book was intended to be my way of sort of expressing how much creation there is in the destruction, how much opportunity for healing and love and connection there is in all of this disconnecting.
And isn't it wonderful that you could get some distance from your own marriage and then be able to incorporate all of your experience, your personal experience, your professional experience, and come up with a book whose intention is to help people who aren't in the office yet.
Right.
Stay out of the office. Stay
right.
out of an attorney's office.
Well, it's funny because one of the first titles that I considered was the title, If We're Talking, It's Already Too Late. And I actually thought, no, that's not what I want to say, because if we're talking, that's a good thing. It's that if you're actually in my office, that that's when you've really taken that affirmative step, that it's gone so far,
Then
now you're sitting in front of me and we're really, it's reached that level. But if we're talking, you know, we're sharing ideas and sharing wisdom and sharing perspective, that we're still in a good place. You know, and a lot of what my book boils down to is just communicate, communicate, communicate. And you're absolutely right that in my own experience as a divorcing person when I went through it, it enabled me to have really honest conversations for the first time with this person that I was married to for, you know, a good over a decade. And for many years, we weren't being so honest with each other about what was going on in our hearts. And so once the marriage was over, then we could talk really honestly. And we sort of joked, because we've maintained a really nice friendship, about the fact that, boy, if we talked like this while we were married, we probably wouldn't have lost the plot. You know, we probably would have stayed connected in ways that we lost that connection. So I really do think that the conversation's an important one. You know?
Well, here's the tricky part, and you and I talked about this. The tricky part is that when you want something, when you have an attachment to something, we talked about you have to be willing to lose it all to keep it all. You know, when we're attached to the outcome of the marriage, when we're attached to how our partner's going to react, when we're attached to the fear, the terror of abandonment if we speak our heart. So we keep pleasing and we keep propitiating to our partner. We want to make them happy. We want them to have what they want so that they won't leave us or they won't reject us. And so when you and I talked about that, you were saying that about your marriage, but isn't it ironic that in order to be able to be honest, that most of us have to step away from the thing we want the most? It's kind of a crazy thing that we all have to think about. We have to risk losing it in order to keep it. That's what you're saying. You're saying, tell the truth, speak, communicate. That's really what you're saying.
Well, you know, I recently read a great book by Jocko Willink, a former Navy SEAL, and the name of the book is Discipline Equals Freedom. And one of the things he talks about is how the definition of discipline is trading what you want now for what you want most. And I thought that was really profound and also really applicable to what people need to do in a marriage, which is there's what you want now, and it's totally understandable. You want to get through the day. You know, you want to get through the day with your partner without getting in an argument and just sort of go along and get things, you know, like let's just – and look, that's the conventional wisdom. You know, what do we tell men in a marriage? You know, happy wife, happy life. Just shut up, agree with your wife. Just that's what you should do. And, you know, you got to kind of go along to get along, you know, and – but the truth is that we are all, as you said, you know, we're creatures of need, we're creatures of craving, we're creatures of desire, we're creatures with attention spans. We're complicated, you know, in some ways. And so it really, my book is a lot about the idea that no, you know, don't just do the easy thing. The hard thing to do and the right thing to do are usually the same thing. And trading what you want just to get through the day in exchange for creating distance in a relationship that's supposed to be the closest of relationships is really not the right way to go. We're getting this message in marriage from our culture, I really believe, about equality. And one of the things you and I discussed earlier is this idea that, you know, equality is not the goal. Equity is the goal. You know, fairness is the goal. There are going to be times where your partner has more need than you. There are going to be times where you're giving more in marriage than you're getting. And that's the nature of love and relationship. You know, there are times as a parent where you're giving more than you're getting. But you don't look at your kid and go, hey, listen, I've done 10 things for you today. You did nothing for me. Like, well, this is real. Because the nature of that kind of love is that we encourage it to be an altruistic love and an empathetic love and a selfless kind of love. Whereas marriage, we're really conditioned as a culture, you know, by popular media and by portrayals of what we think marriages are supposed to look like, to really believe that unless it's equal, and we should all be equal. Well, okay, well, we're equally miserable then. You know, why should you be allowed to go out with your friends? I didn't go out with my friends in ages. Yeah. Okay, so we'll both be equally miserable now, you
exactly.
know, and no one's happy.
James, hard to believe, the first section, we have come up to the first commercial break. When we come back, let's talk about what you and I were discussing, commitment to commitment, which really takes in a whole lot of territory. So don't go away, anybody. We're coming back with James Sexton, who is just a joy to speak to and has a very compelling story that we're going to continue to hear. So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we are back with James Sexton, who is the author of If You're in My Office, It's Already Too Late. James, before the break, I asked you if we could talk about commitment to commitment, because you and I, as you and I both talked, you know, the whole idea, I think, in terms of communication, in terms of doing the hard stuff, you know, really putting yourself out there, really risking, is that we make a commitment to the commitment of marriage, which is very different from getting married and wanting it to work out perfectly, as you said. You want to talk about that and what you see going on in the marriages that are, you know, really not succeeding?
Sure. I think it's really important to sort of break down what it is we're trying to do when we get married. You know, I think that it's assumed that people will marry, you know, and if you need proof of that, you know, just look at how you interact with people who are not married or people who've been dating for a period of time and have not married. There really is this sense of, you, if that person says, oh, we're getting married, no one goes, wait, why? You know, the question is always, why aren't you getting married? You know, it's assumed that you would marry. You know, it's assumed that that's something you would do. But really, do we think about before we get married, and do we have conversations before we get married about what are we looking to get out of this relationship? What are we looking to give to it? What are we looking to get from it? Do we think about marriage as a relationship and think about, okay, what are the goals that we want to achieve with this? And what are the problems we might want to solve with it? And what are some of the problems or challenges that the act of getting married might create for us, you know, unintentionally or intentionally? And so I think, you know, having a commitment to the commitment is really just sort of understanding, you know, and the other, you know, concept I'm constantly talking about is having a conversation about the conversation. You know, having a conversation with your spouse about how are we going to talk about things in the marriage? You know, how are we going to talk when there's a problem? Do we keep it inside? Should we write each other an email? Should we, as soon as something happens, talk about it? Or should we wait and see if it's like a cloud that passes before we commit to having a conversation about it? So I really do think the more that we, again, the fish steps out of the water, the more clearly we're going to see it. Because, you know, we're never as mindful of our good health as when we've recently been ill or when we're in the presence of someone who's ill. You know, we're never as mindful of life and the gift of our life as we are when we're in the presence of someone who's died or someone who's dying. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it's worth thinking and talking about divorce when you're in a relationship, or even at the start of a relationship, or when you're in a relationship that has been road tested and has, you know, met the slings and arrows of day-to-day life, because that conversation reminds us that our partner's affections are not permanently gifted. They're loaned, you know, and that loan is, you know, every day you kind of wake up and decide, are we going to continue this? You know, we're going to continue this relationship. Can I continue to give my love and affection to this person? And so that's the conversation, I think, about the conversation. That's the commitment, to the partnership, you know, to the relationship itself, and talking about that in a really blunt and honest way. And that's what a lot of the book is about. The book is very much focused on, look, why are we married? What's the purpose? We're writing a story together. How do we not lose the plot? How do we stay focused on these small things? Because divorce, I've learned more than anything, is, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts. You know, marriages go...
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, marriages go south as a function of these small... Because that's how we fall in love as well. You know, I often, you know, Tom Wolfe, the author in The Bonfire of the Vanities, one of the characters is talking about having gone bankrupt financially, and he says, how did you go bankrupt? And he says, in sum and substance, he says, two ways, very slowly and then all at once. And I think that's how marriages end. They end very slowly and then all at once, you know. And so thinking about the flood while it's still just raindrops is really the key to staying on track in a marriage, as far as I can see. And if you think about it, you know, if from the day you bought a car, you did every bit of preventative maintenance that a mechanic would tell you to do on that car, you could have that car for a very long time. You know, my sister's a dentist, and she always tells me by the time someone's tooth hurts, it's kind of too late, you know. But if you, from the time you were a child, followed your dentist's advice on how to keep your teeth healthy, you would be in an amazing place as you got later in life. So that's kind of the idea of this book, is to just say to people, look, here are these small things, here are these small habits of mind, here are the things that helped you fall in love, and here's how to stay connected.
You said something that was so true. You said the thing that we fall in love with a person, is the thing that ultimately drives us the maddest, the craziest.
Sure.
I remember saying that to my ex.
Yeah.
I said to him, the things that I loved about him the most, you know, he was this, he was kind of like a frat boy. He was fun and he was a party guy and he had
sure.
great sense of humor, loved to dance, loved to have a couple of beers. And it was marvelous when you're young and single and it's romantic
sure.
and there are no kids or bills to pay, you know.
Right.
And then you get into a marriage and this behavior continues and you say, this isn't appropriate. So one of the things that you talked about, which I think was really interesting, is taking a look at, you know, like when you get married, what are your expectations? Like,
sure.
you're going to have kids? You know,
right.
what do you think is going to happen when the bills come? Because that's what Steve was talking about with that young man on the TV show. He said, you know, it's beautiful now. You know, he said, you know, it's in the honeymoon phase. You don't have bills. You don't have kids. You don't have responsibilities. So when people are married and they hit the wall on this thing, if they haven't thought about it before they got married, how do you help them to navigate and renegotiate what it is that they want to do about
sure.
what they're presented with?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. And look, I think obviously the ideal is to have that conversation at the beginning, have that conversation before, right? But for many people, you know, you don't realize you're lost until you've driven quite a ways, right? You
yeah.
know, and so, but what do you do? Okay, well, you're driving and you realize you're lost. Do you just, you know, push the throttle down all the way and keep going? Because, well, I'm lost. I might as well just keep pushing forward. Or do you slow down and go, okay, wait a minute. What makes sense right now? How do we turn this around? Do we stop the car? You know, and that's, I think, the conversation is that, look, if you're not in my office yet, if you haven't, you know, reached that point where this marriage is just done, you know, it's still possible to have those conversations. It's still possible to step back from the marriage and to say, hey, look, what are you really feeling? What am I really feeling? What should we be feeling right now? You know, where are we at? And to check in that way, because I really do think people want to be deeply connected. As you said earlier, we have this human basic need to be connected and to be loved and to have affection and share affection. And so when we start to get away from that feeling, there is a temptation to not share that in these small ways because it's some small thing. Why do I need to make a big deal with it? But the truth is that being candid and blunt about where the marriage is disconnected is the most important thing you can do. It's a tremendous act of love. It's a tremendous act of trust to say to someone, you know, what you're feeling right now. And the truth is, you really can't argue with a feeling. I mean, you know, you feel what you feel, you know, and so it's not about, you know, you did this and it made me feel this way. It's about, look, I feel this way and let's look at what that feeling is. But I think absolutely people ideally from the beginning of a relationship try to have a conversation about how they're going to address these things because it's going to happen. You know, the thing that you were referencing in the conversation or the question I answered on the Steve show, that appearance, one of the things I said to that young man when the show ended, and I actually, you know, made a point of trying to catch him for a minute, is that, you know, when you go to the movies and you see the previews for a film, you know, the previews are the best part of the movie. You know, it's the
yeah.
funniest moments, it's the coolest car chases, it's the explosions.
Yeah.
The actual movie is going to have a lot of really boring parts. The actual movie is going to have, like, a lot of parts that won't be as good as what's in the previews. And that's dating. That's engagement. That's early marriage. You know, it's the organism, it's the couple without the strain yet, without any of that other stuff. So if you're having problems in the previews, if you're bored by the previews of a movie, you're not going to like the movie. So have real honest conversations, most importantly with yourself, about this relationship. Because as you said, the things that make a fun boyfriend or girlfriend, the things that are appealing when you're 20, 25, when you're in college, when you're in grad school, when you're an early professional, and the things that you're going to want in someone when you're 40, 50, 60, they're going to change. You know, they're going to change, and you want to find someone who's going to change with you or who fundamentally has things that keep you deeply connected to them, even with these other things that change in your life.
Right, and it seems from everything I've read and researched and heard, it's about shared values.
Sure.
One of the biggest things that break up relationships is that people look at the world differently. They have different outlooks. They have different values, different beliefs. And when you're trying to raise kids or you're trying to move forward in life, that can be just devastating. And that's a subject we brought up that is killer diller. The appearance of the children into the mix, you know.
Sure.
And you were sharing, you know, your story of going to law school and working two jobs. And you want to talk about that? Because we're going to have to take another break in about 3 to 4 minutes. But
talk
to us about that whole important subject.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think children, anyone being honest is going to say that children are antagonistic to a marriage. You know, you take two people, you make them exhausted. You put a tremendous amount of stress on them when you have children, and financial stress, personal stress. You know, children don't come with a manual as to how to care for them, and it's certainly a scary thing for people. It transforms, you know, so much of your day-to-day life, and your home environment and everything else changes. So, of course, they put tremendous strain on a marriage, but again, we're discouraged really, collectively as a culture from being candid about that. And really, again, you know, one of the things I was very blessed with in terms of having a good relationship with my ex-wife was our ability, once our marriage was over and we remained friends, to be able to say, you know, wow, I looked at my own behavior and was able to say to her later, you know, after our marriage was over, to be able to say to her, you know what, I'm so sorry that I wasn't better for you when the children were younger, and when I didn't see how much you were probably struggling, and I didn't see, you know, how you needed me to be there for you, and how I, with the best of intentions, wanting to be a good provider, was so consumed with building a law practice and being, you know, successful as a professional and working. If we'd had that conversation while we were dealing with that and said, look, we can still love our children and acknowledge that they're really, really hard on our marriage, that would have been a really good conversation to have, and probably a really healing one for both of us while it was happening.
And you know something, James? I've heard this, and I believe it's true. My generation, and maybe your generation, the way we've been parenting for the last 30, 35 years, we really have helicoptered. We have hovered. We have overgiven to our children. We have sacrificed. My parents' generation wasn't like that. You got your work permit at 14, and you were out, and you were paying for your own things. And I put myself through college. Nobody gave me a nickel to go to college. It was a different world. I think that many of us grew up, and because we did not have parents who gave us those wonderful things, we wanted to do better with our kids. But I think it has cost, I mean, the divorce rate really skyrocketed during these last 35 years. And I think that the children, the way we've chosen to raise our children, has really impacted marriage. And there's so much to talk about. We've got to take a break. When we come back, So much. We have to continue the conversation about children. We have to talk about fear of abandonment, why people don't leave and why they don't speak and, you know, why they don't connect. And I told you I was going to say something about you, and I'm going to say it when we come back from the break. So, don't go away. Don't go anywhere, anyone. And we'll be right back with James Sexton.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. a true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back. I am having such a good time with James Sexton. Such a delight to talk to. So eloquent, so intelligent, so experienced, and so real. James, I love how real you are.
Oh,
what I wanted to say about you is you are a very authentic person who has arrived at being authentic through not being your authentic self in your marriage.
Sure, so absolutely.
Kind of, you know, it's kind of like this loop. And I want to share that because you were brave enough and you know, generous enough to say, look, you know, if I had taken the risk, if I had been myself and been honest, you know, maybe it wouldn't have broken up. And I think that's so important for people in relationships to hear. We have to find the courage to speak our truth. We have to find the courage to not be afraid to lose what we have so that we can have what we have. And
very well
so
said. Yeah,
I just wanted, you know, to share that about you because you've been so wonderful. Let's get back to the kids. Children, oh boy, the cost of raising children today. Just the reality. I mean, do you remember growing up? Nobody was running around to 35 different activities after school.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and what does this do to people? I mean, you've seen the fallout. So
sure.
Talk to us about, you know, how much of this child rearing style of today,
sure.
How much of this is part of the divorce problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tremendous part of it. But what I'll also say, because I don't want to be accused of you know, bashing parenting. You know, there's a chapter in the book called The Myth of the Perfect Parent. And I talk about in that how there is a tremendous pressure placed on people who are married and have children to only relate to the experience of parenting in one particular way. And you're absolutely right. I think the expectations on parents, both men and women, have changed dramatically. You know, there was a time, you know, of my generation certainly that you know, my father was, you know, would kind of grunt at me every once in a while, and that was considered, you know, sufficient parenting. As long as the electric was paid and the heat was paid, he was doing a fine job as a father, and the idea that he would be doing what so many of my clients are doing, which is shuttling their children to 10 different activities And when you have multiple children, you know, okay, well, one parent will take the kid to cheerleading, the other kid will take the child to lacrosse, and then we'll both meet for dance recital. And again, that takes away from obviously the time that people have to share with each other as a couple and to keep their connection or deepen their connection. But it also, it does create opportunities if it's approached the right way for people to have this shared commonality. I do talk about in one of the chapters of the book about an experience I had where we were in this brutal negotiation in a divorce that I was working on, and these two people were just so antagonistic towards each other. They're going through a divorce, and they're fighting over minutiae, you know, and they're fighting over, it was what we call a four-way conference, myself and the other lawyer and then the husband and wife. And they're arguing over, you know, why should I have to pay $10 for another mouth guard for our son's wrestling practice? You should have to shuttle it back and forth between the two homes, and, you know, these kinds of minor things. And the meeting was interrupted by a phone call from the school that their daughter had essentially broken her leg, that she was a cheerleader, and she was what's called a flyer. And a flyer apparently gets thrown up in the air and then is supposed to get caught. But this was a group of middle school cheerleaders, and this child got thrown up in the air, and then unexpectedly, although to me not surprisingly, other middle schoolers failed to catch this girl, and she broke her leg. Suddenly, these two people, like, became different people. You know, they sort of sheathed their weapons, and they started going, okay, well, listen, I'll go get our other child, Brian, from school, and okay, let's leave here, and okay, I'll go, here's the key to my house, you know, why don't you bring, you know, Brian back to the house, and I'll go to the hospital, and then you can wait there until I get back with Katie, our daughter, and you know, that way you can see her and give her a hug that she's okay. And then this husband, who, you know, 5 minutes before had been, you know, shouting at this conference room table at this woman, starts saying, well, okay, you know, why don't I stop, and I'll get Brian, you know, something to eat, and do you still like mushu pork? You know, I'll get that from the Chinese place, because that way you're going to be hungry when you get back from the hospital. They're probably going to take a while with the paperwork. And I'm looking at these two people, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, so there's still a rational human being in there. Like, there's still some connection in there to some commonality that you have. And apparently the children is the thing that you're allowing yourselves to still have some commonality on. So again, I think children absolutely have the potential to be this divisive thing in marriage and to tear people apart. And it also, they have the potential to be something that unifies people. It's all a question of, do we have the conversation? Do we look at it? Do we call it out for what it is? Do we harness that power in some way? Because you only exercise power that you realize you have, you know, and exactly. We have the power to make our connections deeper with our children, with each other. And we also have the power to ignore it and to allow the children to be antagonistic to the marriage.
Right. And what I was driving at is, I think that a lot of us as parents, we're so afraid. We're afraid of harming our children, of
course,
denying our children, of not providing enough for them. But what we do sometimes is we compromise showing up for who we are as human beings,
sure,
for what our needs are.
Absolutely.
And I think that the society today has put so much pressure on married couples to be everything all the time for their children, for their family, for their job, that there's very little time left for them. I was reading something not long ago that said the average married couple speaks to each other something like 17 minutes a week, actually has a conversation, not go for the milk, or they actually has a conversation with their partner. It's
right.
It's judged in minutes. And
right.
So what I'm saying is, I think we need to take a look at, when we're asking ourselves the important questions, for those of you who are trying to keep everything together, maybe it's time to ask yourself the question, you know, can I judiciously provide more time for myself and my marriage, and balance that out for my children in a way that everybody's getting more out of it rather than less out of it. I think by making our children more self-sufficient, by giving our children more responsibility and not being there in such an intense way for them all the time, that we all wind up winning. Don't you think, James?
100%. And look, my experience of clients, and even my own experience as a divorced person, and as a divorced parent, was actually that you know, by becoming divorced, and suddenly by a function of a custody schedule, having time where I'm with my kids and time where I am not with my kids, and it is totally acceptable because this is not my scheduled time with them. You know, I have permission of the universe, essentially, to not be with my children in that moment. It actually really helped me, and I've seen it with countless clients, help them deepen their sense of themselves. You know, who am I? You know, if I'm not constantly thinking about what do my children need from me right now, what is this person, and I'm thinking about what do I want to do right now, who do I want to be, where do I want to use my time and the hours of the day, that you actually deepen your experience of parenting because you bring something to the table with your children. So one of the questions I ask in the book is, why do we have to get divorced to come to that place? You know, why can't we, in the structure of our marriages, say, okay, wait a minute, put aside a certain amount of time in a disciplined way for yourself as a solo person. Put aside a certain amount of time in a disciplined way for your partner and their needs, or the needs of the two of you as a couple, separate from the children. And then put aside time for yourself to be a parent with the children. Because all three of those things have a synergistic effect on each other. If you have a better sense of who you are, you bring more to the relationship as a couple. You bring more to your parenting. If your parenting life is satisfactory, but you also have a break from it now and then, you bring more to the table. You bring more to your personal life and to your married life. And again, if you're in a happy, intact marriage, then you're giving your children a gift. You know, an unhappy couple that can't stand each other but stays together and white-knuckles it for the children, I don't believe they're doing their children a favor. Exposing them to that level of conflict and exposing them to a model of marriage that is, you should find someone and then just hold on miserably together. You know, but a couple that brings joy to the equation and shows their children, hey, you should feel love towards this person. You should feel, I remember one of my earliest experiences of my parents was walking in on my mom and dad, like dancing with each other in the kitchen to the radio, and thinking to myself, you know, like, oh, that's what marriages are supposed to look like, you know? And so I think we have to give people permission to feed themselves. Just as you said, know yourself, know your coupling, your partner, and know your parenting, and understand those three separate pursuits and make time and effort for those three separate pursuits.
Right. And I want to talk about, and I'm going to do a little confessional. You've been doing such powerful confessionals. I'll do a little too. For me, I had terrible fear of when my marriage was having a problem, and it was having a problem certainly in some part because of the enormous time that I put into parenting, and that was because of my own childhood, my own deficiencies, never having had a close relationship with either of my parents, the overcompensation, the overgiving, the overstaying, if you will. And I want to talk about the fear of being alone, the fear of abandonment, especially for women. I think when we find out, it doesn't matter why the marriage ends. It doesn't matter if he's cheating. It doesn't matter, if he's embezzled or, he's just become, a narcissist. It doesn't matter. When we come to the end of the road, most of us, and I'm speaking as I know this is a generalization, but I think most of us women are romantics, and many, many men are. And I think we hold this vision, we hold this value, we hold this idea of safe harbor, of having this loving, committed relationship that is part of the coupling that is so innate to us as human beings. And when we get to this place of damage, and shall we say, you know, we cannot reconcile the differences, the terror, the horror, the fear of abandonment, of being alone, of not being part of a couple. This whole world is couple oriented. The other night I went out, I'm single, and I went out to dinner. I took myself out to dinner. And it was funny, I was loving it. I said, I'm going out to dinner because I had to go somewhere and I wanted to eat in this restaurant. And I was watching the people in the restaurant, the women, you should see the pity looks they were giving. Yeah. You know?
Oh, when I first divorced, I remember I used to go to them because I didn't, I suddenly had all of like this time that would have been time spent with my children, you know, and so I would do things like go to the movies, and I would go to the movies by myself. I didn't want to jump right back into dating, you know, immediately, and I thought, okay, let me go to a movie. And it was so stunning to me how people really do look at that experience as like, oh, you poor thing, or you're a psycho,
you're a pervert, yes.
Right, you know, so I really, you're absolutely right, and I think that human, but see, you're actually, I think, tapping into something that I think is really important for people who are in marriages, and that is, when you describe women in particular, and I think it's true of both both genders, obviously, but I do think women, you know, you're describing it as a woman, and I certainly have no right or reason to question what you say as a woman. You know, you're saying that women have this desire for this connection and this sense of how the being in a couple and being in this relationship gives a certain level of identity to who they are and gives a certain context to them. And that's one of the reasons why it becomes so painful in a marriage to be criticized in any way or to have an honest conversation about where you might not be meeting your partner's needs. You know, constructive criticism is still criticism. It's like a friendly punch in the face. Like it's still a punch in the face, you know. It doesn't feel good to have your partner say to you, wow, you aren't great at this marriage. Like you're failing me right now, you know. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is how we can sort of work around that. I actually talk about how in some ways it's actually easier to manipulate a person a little bit and in a healthy way, in a positive way. You know, instead of saying, you know, I'll give you a personal example. You know, I remember dating a woman and she didn't like, you know, she didn't like scruff, you know, and I wear a suit and tie in the courtroom. And of course I'm clean shaven, you know, the beard thing hasn't translated really to lawyers yet. And so but when on the weekends would come, I would let my beard, you know, I'd let my stubble grow out a little bit. And I remember it in my marriage, my ex-wife didn't like when I had stubble either. You know, it would be scratchy to her face, and she just didn't like how I looked with it. And she would say, like, oh, you know, I hate it when you – I'd go to give her a kiss or something, and she'd say, like, oh, I hate when you have stubble, you know. Now, this woman I was dating said to me, you know, one day when I had shaved, went like, oh, God, you know, I think it's so sexy when you're, like, clean-shaven like that. It's so – like, I just love it, you know. Well, okay, now, I mean, I think I stocked up on razors that night, you know, because it was, you know, it was like, I remember dating a woman once who said, oh, you look so good in red, and I looked like Santa Claus for the next 6 months, because, you know, men in particular, but I think humans in general, really respond to praise and really respond to that kind of positive reinforcement. And so in marriage, there is this tendency that it's okay to sort of criticize your spouse or roll your eyes at your spouse in ways that you just wouldn't do to your friends or to someone you really cared about and wanted to preserve the affections of. It's almost, you know, in sitcoms and TV, it's become like a stereotype of like the wife who's rolling her eyes at the idiotic husband. And, you know, that is not serving us as a culture. You know, we really need to be cheerleaders to our spouse. And even when there is something that needs to be changed or addressed, if there is a way to do it in a way that reinforces connection and creates a sense of cheering for this person rather than a sense of criticism. Because I understand completely when you talk about, you know, a woman finding such importance in that connection and finding such stability in that identity as someone's partner and spouse, well, how does it feel when you know as a man that something's not working for you in the relationship, but you don't want to destabilize this person emotionally that you're with. You care about them. But so what do you do? What most people do is what I did in my marriage, which is, okay, I'll just keep my mouth shut. I'll just keep my mouth shut. I won't express this need or this feeling.
Yep.
And that is how you lose the plot. Is how you lose the plot.
James, we only have a minute left. I can't believe it. I wish this could go on and on.
I do too. I love talking to you.
I just love this conversation. The one thing I want to say in closing, and I'd love your comment about it, I think if we could really step back and speak to those we love with love the way we would want them to speak to us,
sure,
half of our communication problems would go away.
Sure.
Because we're not mindful. We say hurtful things to each other, and it's because we take for granted that person is always going to be there. So when they finally leave, we are devastated, absolutely devastated. So my invitation, first of all, I think, you know, I hope that you're on Steve Harvey every week because you've got so much to offer and so much to share with everyone. Your work is so good. I'm really excited and pleased and privileged to have had you on the show, and I want to tell everybody about the work you're doing. But
the one thing that
I want as a takeaway from this whole thing is to say to people, you know, hear what this man is saying. Communicate, and do it with love, and do it the way you would want to be communicated with.
Absolutely. Great advice. Fantastic.
Well,
advice.
I tell you, James, it has been such a joy. I'm going to try to get you back on here again.
I'd love to. I consider it a yes. Consider my RSVP yes right now. It's a pleasure. I love your perspective, and I just love the conversation. And thank you so much for having me. It's really it's an absolute pleasure. You have such a personal and professional insight on this that I just I'm so inspired by personally. I really like it. Thank you so much.
It's the next book for you, James.
Hey, I'm telling. Well, we're going to have to collaborate. That's what we're going to have to do.
It would be my joy. Audience, go out and get the book. If you are in my office, it's already too late. And don't forget to join us again next week for another really inspiring and wonderful conversation on Living Above the Drama.